David Auburn won the Pulitzer Prize in 2001 for his play called Proof. It's a story of a young woman named Catherine, grieving over the loss of her father, a famous mathematician, who suffered from dementia. After Catherine's father dies, an old student of his named Harold Dobbs comes by to see if there is any worthwhile math in her father's old notebooks. Erica Kreutz plays Catherine. Robert Quinlan plays Harold in the Madison Repertory Theater production of Proof. Kreutz told Anne Strainchamps about the genius of Catherine's father.
I always think of it as his left brain was on fire, and his mathematical genius was spinning and spinning, and then a glitch happened, and it went into sort of the gray line between madness and genius, and that something in there caught on fire, and so he started seeing math in everything, seeing math on the newspaper, in a cup of coffee, in sports pages, in the Dewey Decimal numbers on the library books. He thinks that aliens were sending him messages through that. It's just a constant seeing patterns in things where it's not really socially acceptable to find patterns in these things. It's a little odd.
And Robert, you play Hal. Who's Hal?
Harold Dobbs is the prize graduate student of Catherine's father. And he comes over, not to give too much away about the play, but we'll be reading scenes anyway. So the father is dead at the beginning of the play. And he comes over to go through and read the notebooks that the father left behind and try to find any traces of brilliant mathematics in those notebooks.
Is there a scene you could do from the beginning of the play that would give us a sense of, you know, kind of how they're talking about the father and what he meant to them?
Sure.
When your father was younger than both of us, he made major contributions to three fields: game theory, algebraic geometry, and nonlinear operator theory. Most of us never get our head around one. He basically invented the mathematical techniques for studying rational behavior, which economists have been milking for Nobels ever since. And he gave the astrophysicists plenty to work over, too, okay?
Don't lecture me.
I'm not. I'm telling you, if I came up with one-tenth of the shit your dad produced, I could write my own ticket to any math department in the country.
Give me your backpack.
What?
Give me your backpack.
Why?
I want to see what's inside it.
What?
Open it and give it to me.
Oh, come on.
You're not taking anything out of this house.
I wouldn't.
You're
do
hoping
that.
To find something upstairs that you can publish.
Sure.
Then you can write your own ticket.
What? No, it would be under your dad's name. It would be for your dad.
I don't believe you. You have a notebook in that backpack.
What are you talking
about? Give
it
to me.
You're being a little paranoid.
Paranoid?
Maybe
a
little.
I know you have one of my notebooks.
I think you should calm down and think about what you're saying.
I'm saying that you're lying to me and you're stealing my family's property.
And I think that sounds paranoid.
Just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean there isn't something in that backpack.
You just said yourself there's nothing up there. Didn't you?
Yes.
Didn't you say that? So what would I take? Right?
You're right.
Thank you.
So you don't need to come back.
Please. Someone should know for sure whether or not your father was able to...
I lived with him. I spent my life with him. I fed him. I talked to him. I tried to listen when he talked. Talked to people who weren't there. Watched him shuffling around like a ghost. A very smelly ghost. He was filthy. I had to make sure he bathed my own father.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said
that. After my mother died, it was just me here. And I tried to keep him happy no matter what idiotic project he was doing. He used to read all day. He kept demanding more and more books. I took them out of the library by the carload. We had hundreds upstairs. Then I realized that he wasn't reading. He believed that aliens were sending him messages through the Dewey Decimal numbers on the library books. He was trying to work out the code.
What kind of messages?
Beautiful mathematics. Answers to everything. The most elegant proofs, perfect proofs, proofs like music.
Sounds good.
Plus fashion tips, knock-knock jokes. I mean, it was nuts, okay?
He was ill. It was a tragedy.
Later, the writing phase, scribbling 19, 20 hours a day. I ordered him a case of notebooks and he used every one. I dropped out of school. I'm glad he's dead.
It's a really powerful play.
Yeah, it is.
It's good writing.
It's really good writing. And what I think is interesting is when you dissect it, it's almost like a mathematical proof.
In what way?
There's no wasted moves. That it's almost like a poem that all the extra words have been taken out. It's if you add these two people, Catherine and Hal, together in a scene, both wanting something totally different, what is going to happen? What's the equation at the end? And it almost leaves you with, okay, zero. Both of them are at zero. Or it ends on a positive or a negative. It almost unfolds like a mystery, but even more so, it's a problem. We got four people on stage with a problem, and you mix those chemicals together and see what happens and what comes out of it.
And these are not the ordinary people you'd necessarily
meet
at the supermarket and on the street. I mean, Hal, for instance, he's, you know, calls himself a geek mathematician.
Right, tell about his
band.
But he also plays in sort of a punk rock band that does songs about math.
And what is the name? Don't know the name of the band, but one of the featured numbers
is called Imaginary Number. Written out lowercase I, which is actually an imaginary number, so they just stand there and don't play any of their instruments for 3 minutes. Stand there in silence.
That's a math joke.
And it's a math joke. So
there's a lot in the play, a lot of references to the elegance and beauty of math.
Mm.
Did you get that feeling? Did you learn that from the play at all?
I don't have a background in math, even though my dad is a math teacher. But what I did to play the role is these people are passionate about math. So I tried to substitute things that I was really passionate about. Like I'd think about a beautiful Shakespeare sonnet or a beautifully constructed play, like a, you know, Streetcar Named Desire, something that I really relate to as something beautiful, and substitute that in whenever they're talking about with so much passion about these mathematical proofs.
One of the things that tensions that drives the play is the feeling that for Catherine, it's unusual enough that she's a math genius, but she's also a woman.
Yeah.
And she's almost not believed and not, you know, credited because she's a female. And that's a big part in the play too, right?
Right. And she's also unstudied. She started at school at Northwestern and didn't finish because her father had a relapse. And so she became a caretaker. So there's not really anything credited to her name. She doesn't have anything to stand on except for that she's inherited this, and living in the house for 25 years, she talks to her dad through math. They almost have conversations on a different level and share that insight.
There's a really beautiful scene. I wonder if you would do it when she's beginning to express to Hal something of what it means to her vulnerability as a woman who can do math. And she's talking about one of her heroines, Sophie Germain. Could you do a bit from
that
scene?
Sure, absolutely.
I went to this conference in Toronto last fall. I'm young, right? I'm in shape. I thought I could hang with the big boys. Wrong. I've never been so exhausted in my life. 48 straight hours of partying, drinking, drugs, papers, lectures.
Drugs?
Oh, yeah. Amphetamines, mostly. I mean, I don't, but some of the older guys are really hooked.
Really?
Yeah, they think they need it.
Why?
They think that math is a young man's game. Speed keeps them racing, makes them feel sharp. There's this fear that creativity peaks around 23, and it's all downhill after that. Once you hit 50, it's over. Might as well teach high school.
That's what my dad thought.
I don't know. Some people stay prolific.
Not many.
No, you're right. Really original work, it's all young guys.
Young guys.
Young people.
But it's men mostly, right?
There are some women.
Who?
There's a woman at Stanford. Can't remember her name.
Sophie Germain.
Yeah, I think I've probably seen her at meetings. I just don't think I've met her.
She was born in Paris in 1776.
So I've definitely never met her.
She was trapped inside of her house. The French Revolution was going on, the terror. She had to stay inside for safety, so she spent time reading in her father's study, the Greeks. Later, she tried to get a real education, but the schools wouldn't allow women. So she wrote letters. She wrote to Gauss.
She used a man's name, Antoine Auguste LeBlanc. She sent him some proofs involving a certain kind of prime number, important work. He was delighted to correspond with such a brilliant young man. Dad, give me a book about her.
I'm stupid. Sophie Germain, of course.
You know her.
Germain primes.
Right.
They're famous. Double them and add one, you get another prime. Like two. Two is prime. Double plus one is five. Also prime.
Right. Or 92,305 times 2 to the power of 16,998 plus 1.
Right.
That's the biggest one known.
Huh. Did he ever find out who she was? Gauss?
Yeah. Later, a mutual friend told him that the brilliant young man was a woman.
Hmm.
He wrote to her, a taste for the mysteries of numbers is excessively rare. But when a person of the sex, which according to our customs and prejudices, must encounter infinitely more difficulties than men to familiarize herself with these thorny researches, succeeds nevertheless in penetrating the most obscure parts of them, then, without a doubt, she must have the noblest courage, quite extraordinary talent, and superior genius. I memorized it.
That scene makes you smile, but it makes you cry inside, too.
Yeah. It's a lonely world that she finds herself in.
Oh, yeah.
And if she doesn't do math, if she doesn't do this after midnight when Dad has gone to sleep, it's almost like taking the paintbrushes away from Van Gogh. It's taking a pencil away from Mozart. There's a sense of this deep need to put this down on paper and to get it all out. But her fear is that it's not correct. It's not worth anything. And that's why she keeps it locked up. She has a very lonely life. And that's why when Hal comes in and starts talking to her about the beauty of math, she gets a first glimpse of, this is someone maybe I could trust. Maybe I could show him a little bit of my light. And ultimately, it's not a play about math. And it's not even about genius. And I think David Auburn, the playwright, made that statement that something, the human heart is bigger than any mathematical theorem.
Erica Kreutz plays Catherine in the Madison Repertory Theater production of David Auburn's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Proof. Robert Quinlan plays Harold Dobbs, and Strangechamp spoke with them.